to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner.
What you got? What you got? What you got? What you got?
Aneke, you know I like to get my woo-woo on, and girl, I just finished... What? You know I'm just, I do.
You know, you calling yourself out, and it's good, you know?
I loved it. Let's gather some hands, and we are going to get some healing on.
Yes.
I just finished a book, and you know when I finish a book, I put it down, and I got to tell the kids.
You got to Johnny Appleseed that book. You are ready.
It's like, you know what? Book reports are my favorite part of elementary school, and why should it stop now?
That's why we're friends. I mean, let's be honest. Well, I love it. What book is it?
It is Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. So I am going to cover some of my favorite parts about the book, about how we shield ourselves from shame and vulnerability, and the tools to help us process that and deal with
yes.
it so we can dare greatly.
I love it. That is so good.
What are you doing?
I am about to talk about the story that has been going around kind of undercurrent. It's about the Austin bombings that have been happening. There have been serial bombings
what?
Affecting communities of color in Austin. And it has been reported, but it has not been main news. So I am going to break it down for you guys, tell you with everything that's going on, how the case is panning out, and what some of the subversive language is doing.
Ooh.
So,
wow. This is all news to me. So a Neke News Hour coming up.
Yeah. We're ready. It is the Neke and James Heal and Learn Hour.
Heal and learn it up right now.
Let's go.
Hey, nasty.
You nasty. I'm nasty.
You know what? I was just thinking about something, my little nasty nubbin.
What were you thinking about? And I don't know what to make of that nickname. I don't know if I'm a fan of it.
I like that you were, I was like, ooh, she's going with it for a second. I was trying to get some alliteration. Does anybody ever, because, you know, I see there are two N's at the front of your name. And
yeah.
Did you ever?
Yes.
Let's play a little game.
All right.
Did you ever like run with that as like for a period
yes,
of time, like in college, like
no.
Nasty Neke?
Did I ever tell you that I created a rap for my own name in elementary school?
Please explain to myself and the listeners.
And I made all my friends fucking learn it because I was a taskmaster back then. And all throughout
Ooh.
Middle school, they would say it to me. I don't know, jokingly or not. And I wonder why I wasn't popular, but yeah, I made up a whole rap. I can say it. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah. Do you want me to beatbox a little bit?
No, it's a freestyle.
Ka-choo, goo, goo.
That's how you beatbox?
I haven't
done
it.
Are you from the 1920s? Goo, ka-choo?
Ka-choo. Okay, I see that Beyonce. I'm Kelly Rowland in this instance.
Yes.
I'm like maybe Latavia Latoya. I've already been voted out of
that. That's what you're saying when you're getting on that plane.
It's been a while since I beatbox. I was just warming up. All right, hit it, Nasty Neke.
All right, double N for nice and neat. E is for excellent. K is for kind. And the A is for awesome. The Y is for you. You, get out of my way. A, because a neck is coming through. A neck, A. A neck, A neck, A neck, A neck, A neck, A. Meanwhile, I would be doing the running man.
Ooh.
To that end part.
This is, damn it. See, it's moments like this that I'm so sad that I only met you like 10, 12 years after that. Because my own inner Dina Lohan would have been like, ka-ching, we move
With
over.
That shit?
Oh my God, we could have made you a star. Move over, Cardi B. Like, what was Cardi B doing on the playground? Not that.
I mean,
not
she wasn't. Gold. She was like a fetus at that moment. She wasn't even.
See,
she
even
was like
better.
A sperm when I was making that.
Even better. You had a leg up on her.
Yeah,
you're technically.
So.
You are technically one of the OGs of rap music.
Sure,
That's
I'll
what
take
that
it.
Just proved.
I'll take it.
Man, I'm into that. That
Thank
was so
you.
Good.
Thanks. You know, it's catchy.
Speaking of catchy things,
what's catching?
Well, just the 2018 political season.
Ooh. Doom, 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 doom.
What did I do? Are you beatboxing?
No, I'm singing the theme song to Sex and the City.
Oh, I didn't really see the show that much. I know.
Yeah. I watched a lot of it.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Oh, you did. You did. Yeah.
Anyways, Cynthia Nixon.
Oh, that's where we're going. Yeah, Cynthia Nixon. It's so funny because I feel so, you know, when you live here in New York, you feel so connected to the moments that are happening
right,
here.
So
Cynthia Nixon is making a bid for running for the governor.
Which is,
yeah,
that's a leap. That is like, like fucking, I feel like you have to go up rank. Like you got to be a mayor. Mm. Then you need to be lieutenant governor. Mm. You need to, before you're just like, I'm governor. I mean, it is kind of a bullshit world because our president has never held any public office before. So
the rules, and that's actually what happened. Like Trump did it. And now like the rules, it's fair game. Anybody can do whatever the fuck they want. There is no rules or order to anything. I feel like everyone had just like thrown like all the titles of what's all the positions and thrown up into the air.
Yeah.
And everyone's just trying to grab whatever they can. Like Mitt Romney is running for governor of, I think, Utah.
At least he's run and held office before.
Yeah, but it's just so interesting because it's like there's no linear progression anymore. It's literally like people are like, we got to get people into seats because government is crazy right now. Because like he made a run for senator, then he ran for president.
He's just trying everything.
He's just he's not even from Utah. He's just Mormon.
I mean, that's the way to go. It is the Mormon capital.
He's like, where do they like me?
Utah.
Where do they like me? It's a good place to go.
That's a smart tactic. That is smart.
Okay.
Here in California, we do it traditional. Former mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, ran and got elected to lieutenant governor, and now he's running for governor. So.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, we're classy.
And after that,
he's then going to run for president. Like, that's just literally.
I don't mind that.
That's the trajectory.
I don't mind. I like Gavin
Newsom.
Aneki
likes it classic.
Aneki's
like, drive down the road. I want to see where you're going. Don't try anything crazy on me because I can't handle
it. Stay in the lines. Like Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom, his wife directed Misinformation? What it was called? Misrepresentation, which was a movie, a documentary all about women in film and all the bias that happens against women, super feminist. It was awesome. I showed it when I was in high school. Not when I was in high school, but when I was a high school librarian.
She moved down from the, you're just prepping for your, I wouldn't have been surprised that if in high school you took over the spot as librarian, went into classes and were like, we're going to watch this documentary about feminism.
I would have been doing more than my actual librarian. Ooh.
Ooh.
Burn.
See, you already had eyes on her. You had eyes. You were like, I could do this.
James, I never got her because I only went in there to get textbooks. Two, her office was plastered with senior portraits that I guess students gave her, which was nice. But I'm like, why? You're never friendly to me. You're never friendly to anybody. How do you get all of these senior portraits? And they're literally lining the walls of your weird little office.
I imagine you cutting out your senior portraits right in front of her and purposely not giving her one.
Is it fair to say
like that was your arch nemesis back in high school? Was the high school librarian?
And then I become one? Ooh.
Yes. Ooh.
So wait, James, I want to know how do you feel about Cynthia Nixon? Do you support her causes? Do you support her running for governor? Or do you think that it's just like a celebrity being ridiculous?
This is a great question. Thank you so much for asking.
You're welcome.
When does this become like a town hall debate?
I don't know.
Or a town hall discussion? Here's the thing. I saw her ad, and I've never really watched Sex and the City, but here's what I said after the ad.
Yeah.
I'll vote for her. It did its job. Like, the election could be tomorrow, and I'm like,
she's an actor. I'll vote for her.
She's in my industry. I gotta support. And you know what? She's doing the track that I have plans on doing. Like, I went actor, and then in my 50s or 60s, after I've got, you know, all this like fame and fortune,
right,
I then turned my life over to civil service for a bit and like would run for office. Like, I think that actors, I think it's a great usage. I think I wish that more celebrities would actually get in the ring because ones that
Oh,
not
really?
More.
Wow. Yeah, I was like, this
certain
is a bold
specific
statement.
Ones.
Yeah,
certain specific ones, like an America Ferrara or an Oprah Winfrey type person, or
a political one.
Yes, like an Eva Longoria.
Is
you know,
she
people
political?
Who. Oh, hell yeah. Mm. We talked about this before.
Oh,
at
yeah,
the DNC, she's the one that always taught me that, like, the border didn't cross. Mexicans didn't cross the border. The border crossed them.
Yeah.
She's heavily involved. Like, she's been, like, she's a DNC chairperson. Oh. Not a chairperson, but
she
works
involved.
For the DNC.
Nice.
Yeah, she's, like, she's got, like, a title. Like, heavily works. So for myself, it's, like, that comedian Christella.
Yes.
She was at the Max Fun Con.
Yes, East
and
Coast.
And she was at the Dolores Huerta documentary screening.
Yes.
And she has a plan to, like, make a bid. I think it makes sense because you, especially if you have it in you.
Yes.
And because you do build this really great following.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have something to say, it's better than the old ass straight white dudes that are so out of touch and are so, and rich ass celebrities, you can't buy them. Like, there's not going to be some company that's going to come over and buy them because they're like, I already got my monies.
Yeah,
so.
True. Well, campaigns aren't cheap.
True. You know, here's a funny thing that happened on Cynthia Nixon. So her whole entire, one of her big part of the campaign is that she's like, I'm going to fix the New York subways.
Okay.
And then
good
her,
luck.
Right. Well, they're hundreds of years old.
Yes, exactly.
They're held together by like toothpicks and hope and bumper stickers.
Millions of people travel on it hourly, like minute by minute. So how are you, you're going to shut it down?
It's crazy. But you know what? No one's really thrown enough money at this thing.
Oh.
And here's the thing. Like, you said it's old doesn't really hold real water. It was just cheaply made because you know whose system's older than ours?
Who?
London.
Oh, and that's
Paris.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
The difference is that theirs was owned and ran by the government. Ours in America, where everyone's just trying to get rich and do their own shit.
Lame.
It was just private companies. And in fact, the subway lines used to be run by two separate private companies. That's why you actually had the A, the numbered line and the letter line. And
what
it wasn't
the
like
hell?
The 50s or the 60s that I think the government took hold of it. And anyways, but Cynthia Nixon was on her way to a her first talk after announcing her gubernatorial bid, and her subway got delayed.
Oh shit.
She had to get off the subway. Like,
oh,
it was a picture
God.
Of her being like,
oh, no.
like she's trying to fix it, and she's like, this is exactly what I'm trying to fix. So I'm here for it.
I'm the right celebrities. I'm here for it too, also because she's been out of the limelight for a little bit. It isn't like she's jumping from a television show into the political atmosphere. Like, she's literally been out of it. And I also like the fact that she's a queer woman, so you know, that kind of adds some intersectionality. Yeah,
I'll vote twice.
Blink blink. Then you would go to
votes.
Jail because that's illegal. You could only vote once.
Well, okay. Fine, police woman.
Why are you getting upset about that?
Because it's, you know, I just don't like being putting in a box. You know, I'm an American and
that's
I'm trying
voter
to.
Voter fraud happens. Like, people will vote under like dead people's names and like other people's names. Like, that, you don't want voter fraud to happen.
Well, I'm not voter frauding. I'm just voting twice, once for Cynthia Nixon and then once for the queer woman.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Thank you. That was very generous
I don't
of you.
Know. I mean, I feel like I could see it meant a lot to you. So I really
want to. No, that was me tap dancing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what I'm saying don't make any sense. So I'm here for Cynthia Nixon. I'm here for it.
Yeah. Me too. I can't vote for her, but you know what? I support you from over here and Gavin Newsom. Stay in our lane, Eric.
You just keep doing that. I do want to give, you know, I want to give a shout out, and you are on the front lines of this, so I want to take your quick temperature. You've actually been a champion. Both.
Okay.
However you want to take it.
Okay.
So, you know, you have been a champion for young people for episodes.
Yes.
For, dare I say, centuries.
Haven't been around that long, but sure.
Okay. You know that math is not my strong suit,
you know,
so.
I got the wisdom of 100 years behind me.
You do. That's what I meant. Like, you were like, got the brain of a Cleopatra.
Oh, wow. Thank
coming
you.
Coming at
you. Yes.
I meant the British girls.
Well, you know. They were smart in their own right.
They were. Add up their ages, and you get their wisdom.
I love it.
So, What I, you know, so after the last, the big mass shooting that happened,
right.
These kids were like, fuck this no more,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
And it's so interesting because I remember after Sandy Hook, I thought that was going to be the moment, the elementary school.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be the tipping point because it was babies. It was like elementary school
right.
kids.
Right.
And I thought that was going to be the tipping point,
nope.
And it didn't. And after that, I was like, oh, we'll never get, you know, any new gun laws passed or any
right.
restrictions or anything. And, you know, a lot of people, like, often, I think every generation looks back at, like, the young people and they're like, ooh, they're stupid and lazy and entitled and don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids, these high schoolers, are organizing marches across the country. There's
yes.
one that's happening, one that already happened. It was a walkout. And then there's one that's happening, I believe, on the 24th, a national march.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a school-wide walkout. And this extended to high schools and colleges across the country. And I work at a university, as many of you guys know. I am a librarian. And even though it was raining over here in California, students walked out peacefully, stood in the rain, spoke, talked beautifully. There was chairs set up for the people that were slain in the most recent shooting. It was, they did an excellent job. I really had to commend the students. And I always had to correct myself too, but since I work at a university, I always kind of want to call them kids, but they are 18 and over. So they are adults. They can fight wars for us. So,
oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. But the high schools, those are their kids.
Right. But those are the ones that are really
right.
like, the high schoolers are the ones that have organized these ones. So the one that I there is the one that's happening on March 24th. It's the March for Our Lives.
Yeah.
And it's the March to End Gun Violence. They're going to be marching to Washington, D.C., but that's going to be happening in every city.
Wow.
Boston, Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco. There's a whopping
yes.
720 marches planned around the world.
Wow. So
this is
that's huge. Join those kids. Like, I really do feel like we need to. I'll always remember when I worked at the bookmobile for a public library system, they wanted to get rid of the stops at the elementary schools for the kids dropping off books in favor for adult literacy programs. I believe both are valid, but I also need, we like had to maneuver it and change. Like, we were like, should we just call it prevention of adult illiteracy program? Like, we need to support our children. We need to listen to our children. We don't give the kids of our country enough credit. They are working smart, brave individuals that can understand a lot more than what we do as adults. Like, we get clouded yeah. by money and bills and our own responsibilities, and we don't see what the national temperature of the climate is, and they see it. So
yeah.
instead of discrediting them, and I'll be the first to say it, I do it all the time. I see a pack of teenagers and I cross the street because, whew. But they get it. We need to listen to them. We need to understand
yeah.
them. We need to treat them as the citizens that they are of this country as well.
I absolutely agree. And it doesn't, you know, it just also reminds me of, it's so interesting because it's like, you know, join these kids, but it's also, I mean, we are all of all ages affected by these mass shootings. And
yep.
it's so interesting that I mean, this, it looks like we've never, it's, isn't it interesting? We've never had a march for about gun violence.
Right.
So this is like this is the one. And it's so
yeah.
interesting that it was this moment. And like, and so I have faith now that there will be, that this will be a tipping point, and that Republicans will have to sort of, I mean, look at the numbers of people that are coming out
yes.
and getting these conversations going. So I'm really excited. Hopefully, this is Friday, so maybe you're listening to this and marching at the same
ooh,
time.
I like
Meta.
That.
Meta.
Duality.
Wow. Speak. Yes.
I just feel like getting into the hot tub of your corner right now.
Wow, bubble, toil and trouble.
Oh,
the Halloween episode was months ago.
This is not a hot tub. Are you trying to cook me? What is
you know what? I am trying to cook some bravery into your life because, girl, it is time for another book review.
Yes.
Yes.
Give me them books.
I'm going to help you all to dare greatly through Brené Brown's book, conveniently titled Daring Greatly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Aneka, guess what?
What?
The Max Fun Drive is coming up.
Oh, what? Tis the season. Max Fun Drive.
Yes, the Max Fun Drive is coming up. Yep, I knew what you were saying. You were just so excited that the word kerfuffled out of your mouth.
But you know what isn't getting kerfuffled right now? The time that it kicks off, which is April 2nd.
Ooh, she know things. She be knowing.
I do.
It is going April 2nd. It's going to be running for 2 weeks.
I know. And during those 2 weeks, all the Max Fun shows, including us, will be airing our best episodes ever. So you need to listen.
Our juiciest. We are pulling out all the stops, so
every
get excited now.
Stop.
And as some of you who this is not your first time at the Max Fun Drive Rodeo, and you know that we're going to be offering great gifts for new and upgrading members.
Because it's the best time to support Minority Corner and also Max Fun shows. We want to be able to give you those prizes, those gifts. I don't want to call them prizes. They're gifts because you're donating for these shows. It's the only way that we could survive, really.
Absolutely. What we do absolutely support is determined on your amazing contributions, so we couldn't do it without you. So I am so excited. I wish it was now, but it will be here soon. Don't miss it.
Don't miss it. It starts April 2nd.
See you then. Daring greatly.
I am daring greatly. I am ready for some Brené Brown information. Educate me, por favor.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do
Gracias.
It.
Gracias.
Okay. All right. We are in it. Okay. So I read this book by Brené Brown. And I first, she was on Oprah Super Soul Sunday. She's been making all the podcast rounds. Like, she's done amazing TED Talks. Like, this woman, this PhD woman, just so fucking...
But she's Dr. Brown.
Brilliant. Dr. Brené Brown. She is so fucking fabulous. And I read this book. Her latest book is called Daring Greatly, How the Courage to Be Vulnerable Transforms the Way We Live, Love, Parent, and Lead.
Yes.
She's also written The Gifts of Imperfection, and she also wrote I Thought It Was Just Me. Those are her two other really, really big ones. I think she's written 8 books in total. And
wow.
This book specifically, she unpacks shame and vulnerability. Now, I've been through years of therapy, loud and proud, and I was like, oh, I've unpacked all my shit. I read this book, and I was like, oh my gosh, we never even touched shame. And I didn't realize while reading this book how much shame is a part of our very life and our very culture and the way that we actually interact in our lives. And I wanted just to do a few takeaways that I had from the book. I want you to absolutely read this book because I'm not even going to do it justice. But just a few things that I thought were really, really fascinating that will hopefully give you some tools in operating in your life.
Sounds good. I'm ready.
So this is a Theodore Roosevelt quote that this book was inspired by, where it pretty much talks about, having the courage to, because back in my acting school, there's so much talk that's always about being fearless and being fearless and being fearless. And I think that is fear is a natural intrinsic part of our nervous system. So there's something more that's actually about being okay. It's okay to be afraid, but having the courage and bravery to move forward. And so there's this quote that Theodore Roosevelt talks about having the courage to step into the arena, and that, critics are people who are on the sidelines who are so easy to, make judgments, but they're not even in the arena. And so Brené Brown, she's like, I'm not even interested in hearing your opinion if you're not willing to dare greatly and to have the courage to step into the arena, which is like,
Oh shit. You're right. That's good.
Why am I listening to these people? They're not even in the arena. Right?
Exactly. I know. That's really good advice, because it's like you want to hear from people that actually walk the walk, that are doing it with you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So she talks about vulnerability and debunking. There's a lot of myths about being vulnerable. And she's like, how does she conduct her book? Is done through all this research and talking to people and just collecting. She collects a lot of data. She's always talking about the data.
How I love me some data.
This is Data City USA Mayor Queen Brené Brown.
Love it.
Woman loves her data. And so what she found in her data, defining vulnerability, that there was a lot of people who, there's a lot of myths about what vulnerability is. And she herself defines vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure.
Oh.
And it's about finding truth, holding your truth, and having courage in that. And it's where courage and fear meet. And what's interesting is that a lot of people, like, there's a lot of myths about being vulnerable that, like, oh, if I'm vulnerable, it makes me weak. You know, there's a lot of, like, and
oh, yeah.
And, right?
And that's a lot in, like, toxic masculinity, too.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think even for, and she actually talks about that in the book, how men and women experience shame and vulnerability in different ways.
Oh, and, interesting.
And obviously, like, the with men, that inability, it's almost shameful to be vulnerable and even think about that. But if you actually look at the root word of vulnerability, it comes from the root word vulnerare, which means to wound. But Merriam-Webster defines it as capable of being wounded. And I really like that. It's not saying, like, capable of being wounded, which means I can be wounded and survive and I'm going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is that weakness is defined as the inability to withstand attack or wounding.
Oh.
So those are not the same thing. So we need to be very careful, right? Not the same thing at all, right?
Yeah.
And so she talks about that, like, shame lives as kind of like gremlins in our mind. And she talks, I'm going to read this little passage that she has from the book, that shame derives its power from being unspeakable. That's why it loves perfectionists. It's so easy to keep us quiet. If we cultivate enough awareness about shame to name it and speak to it, we've basically cut it off at the knees. Shame hates having words wrapped around it. If we speak shame, it begins to wither. Just the way exposure to light was deadly for gremlins, language and story bring light to shame and destroy it.
Wow, listen to this.
So she essentially wants us to build up a resilience to shame. That shame is essentially, it's unavoidable. It's going to be a part, we're hardwired for shame, but we want to build up and have tools for building our resilience to shame. And she also notes, again, the power of language, that there's a difference between guilt and shame. So guilt is, I did something bad.
Yeah.
Shame is, I am bad.
Ooh, that's deep.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And how guilt is put. Yeah. Okay. I get it. Yes.
Isn't that so fascinating? And it's like, okay, guilt is something that, oh, I feel guilty I did this and then I can move on. But then the shame is so much deeper because you're just literally like flogging yourself about, oh, I am a terrible person. Yeah. I'm a terrible person. And so we have to be careful about the language that we use about that.
Yeah, you're bringing up good points because I almost was thinking, like, guilt is something that you've done and shame is something that somebody puts on you. But no, the point is shame is inside of you. Like, somebody can tell you something that you should be shameful for, but it takes you on the inside to actually feel it.
And sometimes the shame gets put into us at a very, very young age. And like you said, it's so, so deep. And as we're talking about this, and maybe you can maybe maybe take a bird's eye view. I think it's so interesting, too, about how those of us who are othered, how we experience shame, and that the book doesn't really go into, but we'll experience it differently, of how Black people have been made to feel shameful about things within ourselves.
That are natural.
That are natural. LGBT people have been made to feel shameful about things that are intrinsically who they are. And so this shame, and this shame stuff just runs so deep. And she brings this example of, like, her daughter was in her kindergarten class and made a mess with glitter. And then the teacher was like, you're a bad girl. And she said, the teacher said, you're a mess. And the girl was like, I'm not a mess. I made a mess, but I am not a mess. Isn't
all
that great?
All the snaps to that girl. That is the way we need to treat it. It's like, yes, I made a mess, but it doesn't mean that I am one.
And we need to be careful about how we label ourselves, because people will be like, oh, I'm such a mess, or oh, I am so stupid. No, I did a stupid thing, but I am not intrinsically stupid. So we need to be careful.
That's good language.
In building up our resilience to shame, there are four tools that you can use. So first of all, recognizing shame and understanding its triggers. So you kind of take a pause, recognizing, I've been doing this a lot lately, of like recognizing sometimes when something's off, you can kind of take a pause and be like, oh, like if you're feeling stress and feeling like, a lot of times you're probably feeling fearful about shame that might be about to occur. And so shame, it's biology and it's also biography. And so you get physically recognize when the grips of shame are holding on to you and figure out some of the messages and expectations that triggered it. So it could be sometimes, like for me, it's like work expectations and I'm feeling like I am worthless if I don't get this thing done, right? But that's shame that's happening right there. That's not an actual reality and truth. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to practicing critical awareness. So just getting a reality check, kind of seeing what's going on here. Is it that shame is driving me? Are these expectations realistic? Are they attainable? Is it that they want or need more from me? So you just kind of take this like critical awareness of like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah.
The next thing you want to do is you want to reach out and are you owning and sharing your story? So trying to connect with other people about what's happening, to create empathy for yourself, because shame loves it when you don't speak it. Sometimes it's just being like, it's being vulnerable. It's like being vulnerable. Sometimes I've been with people and I've been like, man, I'm really feeling, I'm really feeling anxious about this, you know, and something that you would never want to admit. Like, oh, if I'm about to do my stand-up comedy show, I would admit to someone, I'm feeling really anxious and nervous right now.
Right.
And just letting it out there.
There's freedom in admitting that stuff. And the thing that I've had to learn is that most people feel the same way you do, too.
Yeah.
By admitting it to somebody, you'll learn that, oh, I'm not alone in feeling like anxious about this thing or feeling weird about this situation or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. And so, she mentions that, you know, in sharing your shame, it's not just recycling stories about how, you know, wrong we were, but admitting, you know, like we were just saying, like, I was really scared in this moment, or I was really hard on myself, or I wasn't feeling worthy, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. When you are vulnerable, it allows us to connect deeper to each other. And that is what human beings long for, connection. And I think now more than ever, in a potentially isolating age, with the way technology is so weird, it can make you feel so connected yet so isolated in the same way.
Yeah.
Being vulnerable with each other is going to be so important to our survival as a species. And then the last tool is speaking your shame. Are you talking, like we were just talking about, are you talking about how you feel and asking for what you need when you feel shame? And so just putting it out there, you know, sometimes like she was mentioning, she was getting into a fight with her husband and they just took a real pause. They realized they were so in their fight. And then they realized, hold on, I'm feeling a lot of actual like fear right now. And they got vulnerable about that. A lot of times when you're in an argument with someone, at the root of it, you're probably feeling fearful about something.
That's true.
And so if you allow yourself to take a pause and then tell that person what your fear is, then that's gonna nip that in the bud. And now we can actually get to the real truth of what's really going on here, right?
That's so true. That's so good. I love that. I just really, one thing that really resonated with me that you just said is the fact of human connection and how much we need it and how we long for it. I just was listening to a podcast called The Human Brain, and they did this thing where there's a social scientist who would notice on his train rides that people, even with or without devices, would sit in silence pretending that they didn't see each other on these packed commuter trains. And so he did a whole study where he asked a bunch of people like, why don't you want to talk? And 15% of them, I'm throwing it off, but basically everybody was like, no, we don't want to talk to each other for fear of the other person would be annoying. But when in actuality, when you did force someone to talk to the other person and socialize, almost 100% of them had a better time than sitting in silence.
Of course, because we long for human connection. But what we do is we tell ourselves stories about why we don't want to engage. And a lot of it comes from there's a lot of fear, like you were saying. She talks about early on in the book, and she sets this preface of like, part of fear is living in a scarcity mindset. And sadly, we live in such a scarcity culture where we live in a not enough culture. Left and right, not good enough, not safe enough.
So
not
true.
Not attractive enough, not yeah. successful enough, not thin enough, not extraordinary enough, not funny enough, not kind enough. You know, we can beat ourselves up. Like, we're constantly just not enough. And so right. then, of course, we're going to sort of shield ourselves off from other people because that fear of rejection, if they're not going to like us, and that shame is so, somewhere along the line, someone maybe did reject us on the playground, or our parents right. said that we're not enough, or we felt unsafe, right? We're constantly right, trying right. to look for safety. And so what it does is just closes us off. We create all these stories in our head mm-hmm. about the other person, other people, why we can't do things. And she also talks about how 3 points of how scarcity mindset is used. So, you know, shame, fear of being ridiculed or being belittled. Also, we use comparison. You know, because we compare ourselves to other people and oftentimes right. we're not enough. And then the third one, which you were kind of just talking about, disengagement is yeah. another way, because we just won't engage, right? That's right. how we keep ourselves safe. We're just, oh. Mm-hmm. And these are all ways to avoid shame, you know?
Oh,
and
it's
we're
so
not
true.
Being brave or having the courage to be vulnerable. So I wanted to, here's the crux of what I really wanted to dig into real quick. Yeah. The thing that really blew my mind are the shields of vulnerability that we all use to shield ourselves from vulnerability. So the first one, there are four, the four that I want to touch on. Yeah. The first one is foreboding joy.
Mm. So she says, yes, this
right?
is...
Ooh, she says that joy can be the hardest feeling to experience. And I was like, wait, really? I feel like, oh, but it can be so hard because a lot of times a joyful moment happens and we're literally waiting for the other shoe to drop. Disaster right. is lurking around the corner. It's yep. too good to be true. What's yep. the catch? Something bad is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in a lot of it happens from traumatic events. Like I think about a mass shooting almost every day. I'll be in the most joyful moment and I'll be like, oh my God, what if there's a terrorist attack or a shooter right now? You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes parents will be looking at their babies and thinking like, oh my God, look at my beautiful baby. Oh my God, what if something terrible happens to my child? Right?
Like there have been so many times where I cross a bridge to work every day and it will be beautiful. I will see a rainbow and then immediately I'll go, what if this bridge collapses?
Oh.
Or like, what do I do if there's an earthquake and I'm on this bridge? Like, it's the same thing. Like, it's always like nothing is, and I listened to that Super Soul Sunday where Dr. Brené Brown was on with Oprah. And mm-hmm. this part really resonated with me because this is something that I deal with all the time where it's like, oh, I'm happy, but this isn't going to last. But no, I need to tell myself, I'm enjoying it right now. Let me just enjoy this. You need permission to enjoy your joy.
Mm. You literally led into one of the tools of how she have how to dare greatly. So I'm going to give you an antidote to each one of these shields, essentially. So you led right into it, Sister Dr. Aneke Brown, or you know. That she says, lean into the joy. You're so right, Aneke. Lean into the joy. Practicing gratitude in that moment of, you know what? But it's really beautiful right now. I'm grateful to be driving. I'm grateful to have oxygen in my lungs. Because here's the key. If you're feeling fearful, fear and gratitude cannot exist in the same moment. They just can't. We can't hold both of those feelings at the same time. So leaning into gratitude. And joy comes to us a lot of times in ordinary moments. It's sometimes in just simple moments. You're just kind of like sitting, drinking tea. Lean into that, you know? Because the more that if you only allow yourself to feel so much joy, you're only going to be, you're limiting how much you can actually feel, you know, and you're limiting your life experience. So don't squander joy. Experience it. Lean into it. And we talk about gratitude all the time on the show. I'm still in the midst of 100 days of gratitude. And there's so much to be grateful for in any given moment. Like, you and I are not enslaved.
No.
There's so many great things that
I'm very comfy right now. I feel good.
Look cute in that jacket. Like,
thanks.
So I'm going to be quickly here. The next shield. Now, this one really got me.
Okay.
Perfectionism. Shield. perfectionism. You know, it's so funny. We celebrate perfectionism to a certain degree in this culture, you know?
Like, yeah, we do.
We celebrate it, but actually perfectionism is, it's not, it's a shield from shame. It's not about striving for excellence. It's not about healthy achievement and growth. It's a defensive move. It's a belief.
It's like, that, I'm going to show you I'm going to be perfect.
Right. But it's that we have to be perfect. We have to look perfect, be perfect, so we can minimize and avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame. It actually prevents us from being seen. It's not self-improvement. It's just trying to earn approval. And so what happened is most perfectionists receive praise from achievement and performance, like grades, manners, following the rules, people-pleasing, your appearance, sport. And then what we've done is we've adopted this very dangerous, debilitating belief system that whatever we accomplish, I am what I accomplish and how well I accomplish it. And just, I do this equals love. Like, that's how I get love and appreciation.
Got it. Yeah, so that's where it develops from.
Yes. And you know what? This one hit me in the gut. This one.
Wow.
More than any of the other shields, this one is in particularly. And I didn't realize, and here's the sick, insidious thing about perfectionism.
Yeah.
I never thought I was a perfectionist because nothing I did felt perfect.
That is quintessential perfectionist.
Isn't that so sad? So now I'm in this circle where so this one really, really hit me. I know sometimes I'll be working on something, a stupid little part of a project that I'm working on. I won't release it because this one part's not perfect. And I feel such shame. And what I can now relate to, you know, it was this fear of like, they'll see this, they're not going to like it, I'm going to get fired, But the root of that is shame. Like, I'm not going to be lovable unless this thing is perfect. Or I don't feel like I deserve it unless it's at this high quality, right?
Wow, man, that's deep. I don't have that.
I'm a mess.
I live in my mess. Pig pen. Pen represent. But I feel for you because there's something freeing to be like, oh, well, just take it.
I wish I had that. That like, terrifies me. Doesn't that make sense? You can now see. Did you know I was a perfectionist? You can be honest.
We've talked about this.
Okay. I did. And that's why, like, James. I'll say this. I love working with you on this podcast because Aneke is like, it's fine. And I'll be you're like, it's fine. And so it really helps me.
I was just
going
to say, we have a podcast together. So, but you balance me out. It's a good balancing because you'll be like, the quality needs to be better. And because of that, it's checks and balances. You raise the quality, and I tell you to relax sometimes, where it's just like, it's a free show.
And so I'm trying to adopt. So here's some of the antidotes to that. Self-kindness.
Kind to yourself, James.
Being warm and kind to ourselves, especially when we suffer, we fail, or feel inadequate. Rather than ignoring our pain and flagellating ourselves. So just, acknowledging it, what's happening.
Yes.
Common humanity, recognizing that suffering and feelings of personal inadequacy, like, it's a shared human experience. Like, everybody feels that in some way, you know?
So true.
And so for me, it's like admitting when that's happening. So that's how I'm being vulnerable, like admitting, oh, I'm a perfectionist and I'm feeling this. And then it allows me to, like, let that go.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great. And also, just side note, you are perfect, James.
Oh, thank you. I am both perfect and imperfect at the same time, and
you're
so is everybody else.
Perfectly perfect.
Oh, I love that. Put that on a pillow for me.
I will. I'll get to crocheting.
And you know what? It'll look how it. Oh, wait, your crocheting's on point, so I know that'll be perfect.
Sometimes.
But it doesn't have to be. Okay.
I don't take pictures of the crap. I just save it and put it away.
Put it away. Yeah. And so she talks about mindfulness, taking a balanced approach to things, and like you were just talking about, and practicing this one. I don't know if this was in the book, but I started adopting this, good enoughness.
Yeah,
that's good enough. That's been huge for me lately. Good enoughness.
Good enough is freeing. It is. But I mean, you got to look at your parameters, though. That has to come with a caveat. Like, you can't be like good enough when you're applying for a job. You got to be like, it has to be like, you know, like if you're making yourself a sandwich, good enough, you know? If you are posting something on Instagram, good enough. But like, you should strive to make things nice.
Do for, your like, best. Yeah.
Yeah. For
but
money.
Also, like, I've missed out on deadlines because of my perfectionism for getting video projects together. Like, yeah. I was working on something way too long.
Mm.
And so, as Voltaire says, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Ooh, that's a good quote. Yeah. I like that. That's a really good quote.
So this other shield is numbing, where essentially to not feel the feelings that we're feeling, we will numb ourselves.
Yes.
And there's very few people, through the data that she's used, that haven't been affected by addiction in some way. It just comes in different forms. And we selectively numb our we selectively numb our emotions, and we can numb through food, TV, sex, social media, drugs, alcohol.
There we go.
And so
all of it.
And so for me, like, numbing wasn't the biggest one for me. But I do, like, I've been noticing moments because I can recognize of, like, oh, I am only wanting this right now because I'm sad about this, you know? So we'll sit. And so, like, the thing is with the numbing is, like, once you realize that this is a trigger for you to don't run away from what you're feeling and just feel that thing. You know?
Yeah, that's me. I'm a big num-num. Like, I num all the time. Like, I am a very anxious person. Like, that's my thing, is anxiety. Like, I will spin out into anxiety.
Sure.
And sometimes I've noticed, instead of sitting in that anxiety, I will have a glass of wine. I will smoke some weed. I will watch horrible television to get me out of it. And sometimes I think it's a good idea to kind of just reset my mind, but I can't. Sure. You can't stay in it. That's where it becomes a problem, when it turns into an addiction, where you're constantly having that glass of wine, and that turned into two glasses of wine, that turned into three glasses of wine, and that turned into a whole bottle of wine. Like, that's when it turns into a problem. And you can sense when you're heading down that road, because I've sensed it. I've sensed it, where it's like, oh, wow, I've been doing this a lot. Or, oh, I'm not facing this thing.
Oh,
I'm not calling this person because I don't want to face it. So instead, I'm going to have a glass of wine and watch this television show. Like, it is definitely, that one to me is super insidious. That one is it's so crazy, spooky.
Because we can use it under the guise of self-care, right? And that's such a word that we've almost overused at this point. And real true self-care is more so along the lines of, like, I need to feel these feelings, or meditation is actual, like, real self-care. Like, the things that allow you to really feel and heal.
I would say it all starts off as self-care. Like, having a glass of wine and watching a television show is fine. But when you're doing it to a point of avoiding something that's constantly lurking, then that's a problem. That's why, to me, it's so spooky, because it just, it seeps in. It really does seep in until you're, like, in the middle of it and you're like, wow, I'm checked out.
Totally, yeah. And she's kind of talks about the same, to dare greatly in the face of numbing, like we're talking about, recognize, like you were saying, recognize when it's happening, just becoming aware, like, a lot, especially if you know what your go-to numbings are, perhaps check in, why am I going to watch this show, or why am I going to have this drink? So that way you're aware if you are using it to numb, and if that's the case, it's like, all right, maybe I'm going to try a different activity for now, or something for the moment. So, because I clearly need to feel something. And so I like this sort of, like, barometer choice that she uses. She says, are my choices comforting and nourishing my spirit, or are they temporary reprieves from vulnerability and difficult emotions, ultimately diminishing my spirit?
Yes.
Are my choices leading me to my wholeheartedness, or do they leave me feeling empty and searching? And so the whole entire thing is for us to be able to dare to greatly. So that's, if you're feeling vulnerable, can you lean into those feelings? Because that's going to allow us to, and now more than ever, I think we need it. I think in some ways, I think we maybe have, like, and I'm guilty of this too much of, like, things under the guise of self-care, but really just things to keep me safe and to not hurt. But the world needs us right now to dare greatly.
It's so true. I love these tips.
Last quick little one that I wanted to throw out there, and then we're going to wrap it up here. Get the book. It's on Amazon. It's on Audible. She doesn't do the voice on Audible.
Oh, but she doesn't read it herself?
She's got that Southern accent, so I guess she's like, I don't want you to hear it. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
The last one that I thought was really interesting, the Viking or Victim Shield, where you're either a victim of life or a Viking. Yeah. So it's like, and that we live in those dichotomies that like, and we shield ourselves in that way, right? That like, either things are happening to me or I've got to go out there and make things happen. And really, it's neither of those, because that's scarcity mindset.
I was going to be like, both are problematic.
That's a shield, Viking or victim mentality.
Oh, so picking either one is a problem. Yes.
Right? Yeah.
I love that.
Finding the win-win in things. And so this comes from redefining our barometers of success. Finding the win-win in every situation. Anytime I'm feeling nervous about anything, if I'm going into a meeting with someone or I'm going into an audition or something, like, what's the win-win here? We both want to win here.
Right.
So
that's excellent.
A lot of times just trying to like bring, before I step into a room, I've been saying this mantra, bring the joy.
Ooh.
Because that's the one, I want to bring joy into this room. I want to bring joy into this space, you know?
Yeah.
And redefining success for us will also help us get out of that Viking or victim mentality. So there's lots more. We just tapped on the iceberg, but those were the really, really interesting points to me that I found that were really very, very fascinating. And so I hope that we're all able to unpack some of our shame. I want to say thank you. I felt, it's so interesting. I felt such closeness to you just now when you were sharing some of your shame and vulnerability with me.
Aww.
It was so interesting. I felt such a kinship with you. And that's why this work is so important, to share these conversations
with each other. If anything, which is one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast with you, and then also watching the ricochet effect in the Corner Kids Playground on Facebook, is that it's allowing, one, on a personal note, I feel super connected to you and super open that we're able to just like share weekly with each other about different things that are affecting us and really kind of tap in and listening to you and how you navigate life. And then also to go onto the Facebook group and see how other people are able to connect and reach out and share to each other and feel vulnerable and be able to find connections across the country. So I just really cherish that and I appreciate it. I'm leading into this joy.
Yeah, look at you. That was really intense. Lean into joy. I'm gonna lean into this joy with you and let's go dare greatly into your corner, girl.
Yeah, let's go.
Hey guys, this is Adam Conover. You may know me from my True TV show, Adam Ruins Everything. Well, guess what? Now we're doing a podcast version right here on Maximum Fun. What we do is we take all the interesting, fascinating experts that we talk to for just a couple minutes on the show, and we sit with them for an entire podcast, really going deep and getting into the fascinating details of their work. Find Adam Ruins Everything wherever you get your podcasts or at MaximumFun.org.
We are in my corner, James.
Hey,
we are now here.
Where am I?
You are in Austin, Texas, currently. And we're going to be talking about all the terrorist attacks that have been going on in Austin.
This is
going
to be helpful because I don't know anything about this. I just know that something happened.
Because it has not been really in the news that prevalent.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Like every time I look over on my Facebook news trending, Austin bombing is not there.
They're probably just talking about stupid tweets that Trump did or something.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
So like, I don't know. So this has been kind of frustrating to a lot of people. And there's been it's been slowly unfolding. And I even got some new information today and that I'll go over. And probably by the time this podcast comes out, there might be new information. Who knows? But I just wanted to get it out there because it's something that is not talked about.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right, so I got most of my information from the New York Times, from Color Lines, from Splinter News, and also Time.com.
All credible sources in my book.
Thank you very much.
She don't fuck around.
I don't. But I will be, I'll be linking these links to the show notes. But also, like, I'm sure that there's going to be new information. And also spread this information since it's not normally, you know, told. So this is just all, this is the story that I've kind of pieced together. So the first attack, so there have been packages, bomb packages, that have been circulating in the city of Austin and just outside of Austin. The first attack happened on March 2nd. There were two more bombings that took place on March 12th, and a third took place on the 18th. At the time, police were like, yeah, they think that these bombs were related. Yeah. So five packages exploded in the Austin area. The latest bomb blast, which is just after the 18th, I believe. I could be wrong. The latest bomb blast happened at a FedEx office.
No.
In Schwerts. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but Schwerts is roughly 60 miles outside of Austin. The employee suffered a non-threatening percussion type injury. So thank goodness the person in the FedEx office was not injured.
Yeah.
The Austin Police Department had been receiving more than 1,200 calls about possible bombs and suspicious packaging. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So the bomb that exploded in the FedEx office was the fifth bomb to explode. It was a package. So it had been shipped to FedEx from Austin. And so that's kind of why they connected it to the other Austin bombs that had happened as well. Mm. So federal agents said earlier on Tuesday that the bomb and the previous attacks in Austin were likely linked to a suspected serial bomber. Now, remember the Unabomber?
Yeah, I do.
That was like a huge thing. Yeah. And we heard all about the Unabomber, but we're not hearing anything about this guy. Mm. And this person. But we'll get to the suspect a little bit later.
Oh, we got a suspect.
Yeah. So, okay. So, the previous bombs that happened were, so three previous package bombs were left on doorsteps. They weren't mailed. And they were detonated when they were either picked up or opened. So the device that detonated on March 18th, the most recent one, was more complex than the previous weapons. And police believe that it could have been triggered by a tripwire or other mechanism. So these bombs are very sophisticated, which is really freaky. So two people have died as a result of the bombings, and five have been seriously injured, including the FedEx employee. So Anthony House, he was 39, black, died March 2nd. Draylen Mason, also black, died on March 12th. And I'm bringing up race for a reason that we'll get to a little bit later, too. So Draylen Mason, who was 17, Mason's mother survived an explosion but sustained injuries, as did 75-year-old Esperanza Herrera, who is Latinx. So people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday's bombing left two men in their 20s who were white, but they were walking by the package. They were hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. So because of the targeted attacks in the communities that these bombs were sent, mostly black communities, black elected officials were urging law enforcement and Congress to label the crimes as ongoing terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
So in a joint statement released yesterday, which was 2 days ago, so released on March 19th, three members of the Congressional Black Caucus, Representative Benny Thompson, Cedric Richmond, and Sheila Jackson, called for an investigation to determine if the bombings were ideological or racially motivated. Mm. They also asked that FBI should brief Congress about the bombings. And this is a quote from them. To be clear, these bombings must be classified as ongoing terrorist attacks and should be investigated as such. Also, we need to understand if these attacks are ideologically or racially motivated. The community impacted is now under virtual house arrest, and the entire city is poised to be in a state of fear, which can easily transition into panic. We cannot stand idly by while our communities are under attack. This has become a national security issue, and the full investigation force of the federal government must be focused on stopping these attacks. So, just to kind of reiterate, on March 2nd, I'm just going to say these names again because they need to be said. Anthony Stephen House, 29, was black, killed when a parcel was left outside his home in Austin. 10 days later, Draylen Mason, 17-year-old, black, killed, and his mother was critically injured. And then Esperanza Herrera, 75-year-old Latinx woman, was injured when the package exploded at her residence. So, and then the two men that were injured when the bomb was detonated by them there as they were walking by an Austin street. So I'm bringing this up because I think that this story is awful as well. The story about the dog that was put in the glove compartment in the plane. There was a dog that a flight attendant put in a glove compartment. The
storage overhead bin.
Yeah, and the dog died, and it's awful and it's terrible. Yeah. And United should have been fucked up for that. Yeah. But I heard about that a lot. Meanwhile, in Austin. Mm-hmm. People are dying because there's a serial package bomber leaving bombs on black people's doorsteps. And I hadn't heard anything about it. I had to investigate. And granted, I got all these articles from large news sources, but nobody's posting about it on Facebook. Nobody in Twitter is talking about this. Like, only now it's reached a fevered pitch when people are talking about it. The president just barely released something now. So it's like we need to also, like, both are important, but why is one not talked about, you know? Sure. So I have the Patriot Act defines domestic terrorism, which the caucus, the Black Caucus invoked, in their statement, as an attempt to intimidate or coerce a civilian population to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction and assassination or kidnapping. It is literally the first, intimidate or coerce a civilian population. That's exactly what you're doing when you're putting packages, bombs disguised as packages, in front of doors. Yeah. That makes everybody freak out. That makes me scared. I casually pick up packages all day long in front of my doorstep, you know? Mm-hmm. So why it wasn't defined as domestic terrorism is beyond me right away, you know? So,
well, also makes me think, just to put a quick pit, there's a lot of, it's so interesting, like, so many, like, I didn't realize that was the definition. I don't understand, again, now why the Ku Klux Klan or any of these sort of, like,
exactly, they're terrorists.
These terrorists or these shooters who have enacted specifically to target specific communities are terrorists. They're not, we've talked about this before, but they're not troubled youth or whatever. They're terrorists. Domestic terrorists.
Put a pin in that, bro. We're going to go back into language in just a second.
Okay. Jump the gun. No, bat
just
phrasing.
Just a second.
Jesus.
Because just today, which we're recording this on Wednesday.
So who knows what will develop by Friday?
We don't know. But, well, I mean, it's kind of, it's over. But so, they zeroed in on a suspect. His name is Mark Anthony Condit. He's described as a 24-year-old white man in the last 24 to... So they found him in the last 24 to 36 hours.
There we go.
They tracked him in his car by a nearby hotel, and a chase ensued. While he was being pursued, he detonated a bomb in his car.
Who is this bomber? It's like some, like, villain.
He killed himself.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Yeah. Where do you get all these bombs from? Who are these people?
I don't even know. So the official says authorities identified a so they found him... they identified him by a security video and where the shipping had been, so they were able to track him down.
Did they say why he was targeting those specific people? I'm on pins and needles.
No.
Oh, okay.
They haven't said that yet.
Okay.
But they also said that they were able to obtain a search warrant by his Google search history, which showed him conducting searches they considered suspicious, which who knows what that means.
What?
But here's the kicker.
Yes, yes.
You ready for the kicker?
No.
And this is why I wanted to put a pin on what you were talking about of labeling things as terrorism.
Okay. Yeah.
I was scrolling through Twitter casually, minding my own damn business, and I found a tweet that somebody had retweeted from the Austin Statesman, which is the newspaper of Austin. Mm-hmm. Had a nice picture of him. Very chill picture of Jesus. This guy. And next to a statement that says, a friend once quoted that he was rough around the edges. Language. Mm-hmm. Language, people. Mm-hmm. The Austin Statesman should be ashamed of themselves because they're perpetuating the whole thing that we're talking about. If he were to be any other race, if he were a black guy, God forbid, if he was Middle Eastern, mm-hmm. This would have been a witch hunt. They wouldn't have posted such a chill picture of this dude.
No.
They wouldn't have gotten a quote from his friend saying that he was rough around the edges. Rough around the edges? He created bombs, disguised them as packages, and targeted people of color. Like, that is fucked up. That's not rough around. Rough around the edges is me when I run a red light by accident.
Yeah, you being
rough. Rough around the edges is me when I accidentally wear my shirt inside
or
out.
Or, like, coming
rough
to
around
brunch
the edges
drunk.
Is like,
not
yeah,
that you did
that's
that.
Rough around the edges. I mean, that's a little messed up, but that's
that
rough.
Is like, okay,
that's
Aneka
more
is
rough around
rough
the edges
today.
Yeah, she's a little rough today. Like, yeah. Rough around the edges is when I'm pissed off at somebody and go like, fuck you, Lloyd.
Yeah.
When I should be like, oh, I'm sorry, Lloyd.
Yeah,
that's rough around the edges. Not fucking leaving scary, terrorizing a community mm-hmm. who doesn't even know if it's a package from Amazon or if they're gonna die today.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
And
I'm pissed at that.
I agree with your anger. I am right there with you. And it's so interesting because, you know, we talked about this in the last, you know, how not safe enough is one of this, like, we're all looking for safety. And politicians mm-hmm. use that as a tactic, that you're not safe enough, you're not safe enough. And it's so interesting that in this last election, they painted such a picture mm-hmm. about who we're supposed to be not safe from. And it's interesting because the media doesn't really... And the most attacks, the domestic terrorist attacks that happen are from white men in this country. It's mm-hmm. that is those, there's the data behind it, the statistics behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And not saying we need to be afraid of all. I just think it's interesting that they won't put the real images out there in the news to really
the
report
language.
About.
Like, let's just call it what it is. Instead of saying he's rough around the edges,
he's
say,
a terrorist.
Domestic terrorist kills himself being pursued by authorities.
Yeah.
That's what it should be said, because that is literally what it is. Mm. He was not rough. Don't go pulling quotes from his friends about him being rough around the edges. Like, and also, let's talk about the fact why we don't know about this.
Yeah.
Why this wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. Why this wasn't brought up more. Why the president didn't talk about this. Why the people that who were targeted are ignored.
Yeah.
Like, these are things that we need to focus on. Like, there is an epidemic currently of missing black children in the United States that nobody talks about.
Mm-hmm.
Black children are constantly being killed and taken away. You can look it up. It's a whole big thing. And we don't know anything about it.
No.
Like, certain attention. I mean, let's break it down. Basically, news outlets, newspapers, news stations, yeah, they want to give us a fair look at the news, but they also want to get revenue from commercials and from people who are paying for ad space. And people who are paying for ad space and want commercials want people to click on things, want people to look at stories. And that is why certain topics aren't breached as often as others.
Mm-hmm.
Because news about black people, news about people of color, news about intersectional people, so like we're talking like, you know, black queer communities, black women, POCs, all of that.
It's not click
never
enough.
Get covered.
It's not, because it's so interesting, because it's sort of like the why our... This is so interesting, Aneka. I just put two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
It is why our stories don't get told by mainstream Hollywood in the same way. So it's the
yep.
same thing of why our stories, our true-to-life stories, don't get told in the news, because
exactly.
they don't feel like it has enough broad demographic to it. But I will tell you this. Your
yes.
Our jobs as storytellers is to create...
Yes.
empathy. And for us to be able to do our jobs, we need to tell as many diverse types of stories as we possibly can to really, our job is to reflect the human experience. And if you're only reflecting it in a certain way, you're doing it a disservice. You're not showing the full picture. And that's, they're not showing us the full picture. And I wanted to say, this is why I know you haven't seen it, but I really do recommend 7 Seconds, because it's on Netflix, starring Regina King, who is, give that woman all,
amazing.
Give her all the awards. She is gunning for that Emmy. I can see it. I see it, Regina King. Yeah. She is giving a tour de force performance, and it was written by this Canadian woman who did The Killing, and I think it's so fascinating, because it's essentially, I'm not going to, it's interesting because it's, okay, a young black kid is killed by the police. I won't tell you how, but it's done in a very interesting way. And it's 13 up, and I think it's like 10 episodes. And it's so interesting because it shows how it affects an entire community of New Jersey. And and I will say it's heightened drama. There's certain things that's like, oh, okay, all right.
Well, I mean, it's a TV show.
And but you know what? They keep me with my popcorn. Nom, 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 nom. And, and the plot twists are so well done, so fascinating. And so like, oh yeah, that's how we would do it in 2018. And it's so interesting. Characters are very empathetic. Not that the cops are painted as like, I see them, I see who you are, I will pray for your souls, but you know, like, it's a very good series. And what I appreciated with why I'm going on this tangent is that I appreciate that's what storytelling is doing right now, is that's what we're telling, that 10 years ago, we weren't telling stories like that. And that this isn't the first one. Shots Fired with Sana Lathan has a very similar sort of plot as well on Fox.
So you're saying that our news stories need to mimic what's happening, the current trend that's happening on television and movies right now.
Yeah.
Like, we need to share these stories.
And I think that's what I'm really impressed. And I say, like, I hope people watch that show. I think it's going to be like an anthology. They're going to do like a different cast in a different storyline, like every season or whatnot. But yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that it needs to reflect. Yeah. It's our job. You and I, we can't just be like, okay, let's...
I mean, that's the reason why I wanted to bring up the story about Austin bombing. Even though I saw today, like, I had planned to talk about it, to bring awareness of it, and then I saw that they caught him, but I still feel like I needed to tell about this story.
I knew
because
nothing,
this is a big deal.
I knew nothing about this. And okay, I knew nothing about this. Like,
five bombs. Two people were killed. That's a big deal.
Huge. It's huge.
Not to mention, this is in Austin, where people are like, ooh, Austin's so liberal. Austin's so weird. Austin's so, it's like an island of liberal in Texas. When no, this is still happening. It's still the climate.
Yeah.
So one, I definitely keep your eye on the news and make sure that stories that need to be told are told. And two, watch 7 Seconds. I mean, I'm going to watch it. I watched the first beginning of the first episode.
You got to be in a zone to be in there. Also, the first few episodes, it's like, okay. Once it gets going, though, ooh, it gets going.
Yeah.
And that girl from Children of Men, Hope British something, she's in it and she's fabulous.
Awesome.
Oh.
Well,
I would say to parents in the area, if your kids are witnessing this news, have a conversation with them. I realized recently, and one of my foreboding joy points is that I always often think that I'm going to get blown up by a bomb. And what I realized was from, I was meditating and this hit me. And like, I have not thought about this in decades, that when I was a kid in kindergarten, we had to evacuate the school several times in the year because someone kept calling in a bomb threat.
Oh my God.
That happened a lot. And I remember crying, and they told us, like, we were sort of shamed for crying. We, like, and I'm like 5 or 6 years old. And
You're scared.
No one ever had a conversation with any of us about that. And so that's something that I have that trauma and that I've lived with that. And so it just kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, no, when the terror of something like that is happening in a community, that's why it's terrorism.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't just affect the individuals who were targeted, it affects the whole community that surrounds it.
Mm-hmm.
So having conversations, I would even expand it to
everyone.
Have conversations with each other.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I think we don't realize how much that shit affects us. I don't even think people like, you know, 9/11 was a huge trauma that I think we're still experiencing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think we allow ourselves to really talk about that trauma enough. And then it's debilitating because then we don't know that it's there. And it's like, we have trauma and we need to heal it so we can move on and then do great things and not be debilitated by it.
I 100% agree. So connecting our two corners, one, look out, share the stories, tell untold stories, but also communicate. Don't close off.
No, yeah.
Reach out to people that are a part of your community and share with each other, because you never know what you're going to, who you might affect, who you might change, including yourself.
Absolutely. So, and as you brought up in the last corner, is how much, how important it is and how much we all are better for it when we connect and are there for each other as a community. It's really a time for us to come together.
Yeah, and big hugs up to all of our corner kids in Austin, yeah, and in Texas in general. We are looking out for you guys.
Loving and hugging you, sending you hope, prayers, meditation, vibes, and healing.
What a good episode.
Should I call you Aneke Walters? Aneke Winfrey Walters.
I'll take it.
That was some hard hitting journalism.
You know, I try. Good. I try every once in a while. I try to move away from a list.
Lists are important. People, a list has a time and a place. A time and a place for a list. And today, Aneke was like bringing out the big guns.
Trying to.
Oh, God, that's so terrible. Sorry, phrasing. Oh, it wasn't a shooting. It was a bombing. But still.
No, you know, violent.
So, you know what? Yes. Yeah, but also too, like, look at our language that we use. Like,
exactly.
You know, it's just like, even in the workplace, like Ariana Huffington called everybody out on this, that like we live in this such like this masculine culture and so violent. They're like, a lot of times people will be, at least in the tech industry, they're or, like, a lot of business, like, they're killing it, they're crushing it.
Oh, I know. They're, exactly. Like it's that, like, is so interesting,
isn't it? Like, we need to really reframe that. It's like,
we do.
Well, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, you're doing really great. Doesn't really, you know, like, go out there and get it.
It shouldn't be like,
it.
I'm killing it. It should be like, yeah, you're doing good. Nice job.
How come, like, it can't be like, you know, you're sparkling. You are sparkling.
Well, I mean,
you are sparkling. Look at him. Go in there and jazz it up.
I like that.
You are gonna high kick it up.
Well, you know what, James? You jazzed this episode.
We did. We got jazzy with it. We jazzed it up. Oh, wow. We sure did. Big thanks for everybody for listening to this episode.
Yes. Thank you. New, current, past listeners.
Present,
we love
future.
You all. Present, future. Oh, all speaking of future, tell some people about us. Why not? Share the
Spread
news.
Spread the word. You can always take a picture of this episode and shoot it out at the Instagrams.
Yes. Retweet.
What? That's my new pop single coming out.
I like it.
2022.
James, where can people retweet us at? What's
Twitters. We are at Minority Kona with a K. That's us on the Twitters.
Yes. We're also on Facebook.
We are. And you can ask us anything as well. We are here to help you. If you have a comment or anything, send us a message.
Yes.
Let us know what what you're really feeling. Tweet at us. Get involved in the conversation. If there's something, if there's news that we're missing out, you can always mail us in. Our email account is at minoritycorner@gmail.com.
That was confusing. It's just minoritycorner with a K at gmail.com.
What did I say?
You said at minoritycorner with a... I'm afraid somebody's going to be like, A-T-M-I-N...
You know what happened? I was talking, but I was not being... I'm sorry, y'all. I was not being very present.
No,
I was,
but I'm also like being nitpicky right now, though, too.
No, so. It's good. Taskmaster.
Okay. I know.
She's on it. Now who's the perfectionist? Uh-oh. I'm just trying to be
you're
enough.
Like, it's good enough, Aneke.
It's good enough, Aneke. They'll figure it out. Nasty Aneke with her nasty raps. Well, I'm going to let you get back to your nasty raps.
Okay, I will. I'll be thinking of some new bars. Some new hot bars for you for the next week.
And I'll be working on my beatboxing. A goo 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 chop. A bee ba da boo. Do up do up do wee. Beatboxing.
It's like if Al Jarreau had a rap single.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together
we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.